An angry murmur arose from the troop.
"Hold!" Stilgar called out. "The lad doesn't know our rule."
Then to Paul,
"There can be no yielding in the Tahadi challenge. Death is the test of it."
Jessica saw Paul swallow hard, and she thought,
"He's never killed a man like this. In the hot blood of a knife fight, can he do it?"
Paul circled slowly right, forced by Jameis's movement. The prescient knowledge of the time-boiling variables in this cave came back to plague him now. His new understanding told him there were too many swiftly compressed decisions in this fight for any clear channel ahead to show itself. Variable piled on variable. That was why this cave lay as a blurred nexus in his path. It was like a gigantic rock in the flood, creating maelstroms in the current around it.
"Have an end to it, lad," Stilgar muttered. "Don't play with him."
Paul crept farther into the ring, relying on his own edge and speed. Jameis backed now that the realization swept over him that this was no soft off-worlder in the Tahadi ring, easy prey for a Fremen kris knife. Jessica saw the shadow of desperation in the man's face.
"Now is when he's most dangerous," she thought. "Now he's desperate and can do anything. He sees that this is not like a child of his own people, but a fighting machine born and trained to it from infancy. Now the fear I planted in him has come to bloom."
And she found in herself a sense of pity for Jameis, an emotion tempered by awareness of the immediate peril to her son.
"Jameis could do anything, any unpredictable thing," she told herself.
She wondered then if Paul had glimpsed this future, if he were reliving this experience. But she saw the way her son moved, the beads of perspiration on his face and shoulders, the careful wariness visible in the flow of muscles. And for the first time she sensed, without understanding it, the uncertainty factor in Paul's gift. Paul pressed the fight now, circling but not attacking. He had seen the fear in his opponent. Memory of Duncan Idaho's voice flowed through Paul's awareness.
"When your opponent fears you, then's the moment when you give the fear its own rein. Give it the time to work on him. Let it become terror. The terrified man fights himself. Eventually, he attacks in desperation. That is the most dangerous moment, but the terrified man can be trusted usually to make a fatal mistake. You are being trained here to detect these mistakes and use them."
The crowd in the cavern began to mutter.
"They think Paul's toying with Jameis," Jessica thought. "They think Paul's being needlessly cruel."
But she sensed also the undercurrent of crowd excitement, their enjoyment of the spectacle. And she could see the pressure building up in Jameis. The moment when it became too much for him to contain was as apparent to her as it was to Jameis, or to Paul. Jameis leaped high, fainting and striking down with his right hand, but the hand was empty. The kris knife had been shifted to his left hand. Jessica gasped, but Paul had been warned by Chani.
"Jameis fights with either hand."
And the depth of his training had taken in that trick en passant.
"Keep the mind on the knife and not on the hand that holds it,"
Gurney Halleck had told him time and again.
"The knife is more dangerous than the hand, and the knife can be in either hand."
And Paul had seen Jameis's mistake, bad footwork so that it took the man a heartbeat longer to recover from his leap, which had been intended to confuse Paul and hide the knife shift. Except for the low yellow light of the glow globes and the inky eyes of the staring troop, it was similar to a session on the practice floor. Shields didn't count where the body's own movement could be used against it. Paul shifted his own knife in a blurred motion, slipped sideways, and thrust upward where Jameis's chest was descending, then away to watch the man crumble. Jameis fell like a limp rag, face down, gasped once and turned his face toward Paul, then lay still on the rock floor. His dead eyes stared out like beads of dark glass.
"Killing with the point lacks artistry," Idaho had once told Paul. "But don't let that hold your hand when the opening presents itself."
The troop rushed forward, filling the ring, pushing Paul aside. They hid Jameis in a frenzy of huddling activity. Presently, a group of them hurried back into the depths of the cavern carrying a burden wrapped in a robe. And there was no body on the rock floor. Jessica pressed through toward her son. She felt that she swam in a sea of robed and stinking backs, a throng strangely silent.
"Now is the terrible moment," she thought. "He has killed a man in clear superiority of mind and muscle. He must not grow to enjoy such a victory."
She forced herself through the last of the troop and into a small open space where two bearded Fremen were helping Paul into his stillsuit. Jessica stared at her son. Paul's eyes were bright. He breathed heavily, permitting the ministrations to his body rather than helping them.
"Him against Jameis, and not a mark on him," one of the men muttered.
Shawnee stood at one side, her eyes focused on Paul. Jessica saw the girl's excitement, the admiration in the elfin face.
"It must be done now and swiftly," Jessica thought.
She compressed ultimate scorn into her voice and manner, said,
"Well, now, how does it feel to be a killer?"
Paul stiffened as though he had been struck. He met his mother's cold glare, and his face darkened with a rush of blood. Involuntarily, he glanced toward the place on the cavern floor where Jameis had lain. Stilgar pressed through to Jessica's side, returning from the cave depths where the body of Jameis had been taken. He spoke to Paul in a bitter, controlled tone.
"When the time comes for you to call me out and try for my Burda, do not think you will play with me the way you played with Jameis."
Jessica sensed the way her own words and Stilgar's sank into Paul, doing their harsh work on the boy. The mistake these people made, it served a purpose now. She searched the faces around them, as Paul was doing, seeing what he saw. Admiration, yes, and fear, and in some, loathing. She looked at Stilgar, saw his fatalism, knew how the fight had seemed to him. Paul looked at his mother.
"You know what it was," he said.
She heard the return to sanity, the remorse in his voice. Jessica swept her glance across the troop, said,
"Paul has never before killed a man with a naked blade."
Stilgar faced her, disbelief in his face.
"I wasn't playing with him," Paul said.
He pressed in front of his mother, straightening his robe, glanced at the dark place of Jameis's blood on the cavern floor.
"I did not want to kill him."
Jessica saw belief come slowly to Stilgar, saw the relief in him as he tugged at his beard with a deeply veined hand. She heard muttering awareness spread through the troop.
"That's why I asked him to yield," Stilgar said. "I see. Our ways are different, but you'll see the sense in them. I thought we'd admitted a scorpion into our midst."
He hesitated, then,
"And I shall not call you lad the more."
A voice from the troop called out,
"Needs a naming still."
Stilgar nodded, tugging at his beard.
"I see strength in you, like the strength beneath a pillar."
Again he paused, then,
"You shall be known among us as Usul, the base of the pillar. This is your secret name, your troop name. We of Siege Tabor may use it, but none other may so presume. Usul."
Murmuring went through the troop.
"Good choice, that. Strong. Bring us luck."
And Jessica sensed the acceptance, knowing she was included in it with her champion. She was indeed Sayadina.
"Now, what name of manhood do you choose for us to call you openly?" Stilgar asked.
Paul glanced at his mother, back to Stilgar. Bits and pieces of this moment registered on his prescient memory, but he felt the differences as though they were physical, a pressure forcing him through the narrow door of the present.
"How do you call among you the little mouse, the mouse that jumps?" Paul asked, remembering the pop-hop of motion at Tuono Basin.
He illustrated with one hand. A chuckle sounded through the troop.
"We call that one Muad'Dib," Stilgar said.
Jessica gasped. It was the name Paul had told her, saying that the Fremen would accept them and call him thus. She felt a sudden fear of her son, and for him. Paul swallowed. He felt that he played a part already played over countless times in his mind, yet there were differences. He could see himself perched on a dizzying summit, having experienced much and possessed of a profound store of knowledge, but all around him was abyss. And again he remembered the vision of fanatic legions following the green and black banner of the Atreides, pillaging and burning across the universe in the name of their prophet, Muad'Dib.
"That must not happen," he told himself.
"Is that the name you wish, Muad'Dib?" Stilgar asked.
"I am an Atreides,"
Paul whispered, and then louder.
"It's not right that I give up entirely the name my father gave me. Could I be known among you as Paul Muad'Dib?"
"You are Paul Muad'Dib," Stilgar said.
And Paul thought,
"That was in no vision of mine. I did a different thing."
But he felt that the abyss remained all around him. Again a murmuring response went through the troop as man turned to man.
"Wisdom with strength.
Couldn't ask more.
It's the legend for sure.
Lizan al-Ghaib.
Lizan al-Ghaib."
"I will tell you a thing about your new name," Stilgar said. "The choice pleases us. Muad'Dib is wise in the ways of the desert. Muad'Dib creates his own water. Muad'Dib hides from the sun and travels in the cool night. Muad'Dib is fruitful and multiplies over the land. Muad'Dib we call Instructor of Boys. That is a powerful base on which to build your life, Paul Muad'Dib, who is Usul among us. We welcome you.
Stilgar touched Paul's forehead with one palm, withdrew his hand, embraced Paul, and murmured, Usul. As Stilgar released him, another member of the troop embraced Paul, repeating his new troop name. And Paul was passed from embrace to embrace through the troop, hearing the voices, the shadings of tone.
Usul!
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 Already he could place some of them by name. And there was Chani, who pressed her cheek against his as she held him and said his name. Presently, Paul stood again before Stilgar, who said,
Now, you are of the Ichvan Bedvine, our brother.
His face hardened, and he spoke with command in his voice.
And now, Paul Muad'Dib, tighten up that still suit.
He glanced at Chani.
Chani, Paul Muad'Dib's nose plugs are as poor a fit I've ever seen. I thought I ordered you to see after him.
I hadn't the making still, she said. There's Jameis, of course, but...
Enough of that!
Then I'll share one of mine, she said. I can make do with one until...
You will not, Stilgar said. I know there are spares among us. Where are the spares? Are we a troop together, or a band of savages?
Hands reached out from the troop, offering hard, fibrous objects. Stilgar selected four, handed them to Chani.
Fit these to Usul and the Sayadina.
A voice lifted from the back of the troop.
What of the water, Still? What of the leader Johns and their pack?
I know your need, Farak, Stilgar said.
He glanced at Jessica. She nodded.
Broach one for those that need it, Stilgar said. Watermaster! Where is the watermaster? Ah, Shimum, care for the measuring of what is needed. The necessity and no more. This water is the dower property of the Sayadina, and will be repaid in the siege at field rates less pack fees.
What is the repayment at field rates?
Jessica asked.
10 for 1, Stilgar said.
But
it's a wise rule, as you'll come to see, Stilgar said.
A rustling of robes marked movement at the back of the troop as men turned to get the water. Stilgar held up a hand, and there was silence.
As to Jameis, he said, I order the full ceremony. Jameis was our companion and brother of the Ichwan Bedvine. There should be no turning away without the respect due one who proved our fortune by his Tahadi challenge. I invoke the right at sunset, when the dark shall cover him.
Paul, hearing these words, realized that he had plunged once more into the abyss. Blind time. There was no past occupying the future in his mind, except... He could still sense the green and black Atreides banner waving, somewhere ahead. Still see the Jihad's bloody swords and fanatic legions.
It will not be, he told himself. I cannot let it be. God created Arrakis to train the faithful.
From The Wisdom of Muad'Dib by the Princess Irulan. In the stillness of the cavern, Jessica heard the scrape of sand on rock as people moved, the distant bird calls that Stilgar had said were the signals of his watchmen. The great plastic hood seals had been removed from the cave's opening. She could see the march of evening shadows across the lip of rock in front of her and the open basin beyond. She sensed the daylight leaving them, sensed it in the dry heat as well as the shadows. She knew her trained awareness soon would give her what these Fremen obviously had, the ability to sense even the slightest change in the air's moisture. How they had scurried to tighten their stillsuits when the cave was opened. Deep within the cave, someone began chanting,
Ima trava okolo, e korenja okolo.
Jessica translated silently.
These are ashes, and these are roots.